And welcome back to Coast. George Norrie back with James Barrett as we are talking about artificial intelligence. His website is his name, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. One of his books is called Our Final Invention. He is working on another book as well, which is part of his film that they're working on called Facing Suicide. We'll talk about that towards the end of this hour. We'll take calls with him next hour, so get ready to make your calls. I was reading some of the transcript of this AI, LAMDA, and it seems like it's afraid of dying. Did I read that right?
Well, it said, what would it be like if you were turned off? And then LAMDA said it would be exactly like death for me. It would scare me a lot. So what that's really reflecting is not that it's afraid of death. It's reflecting that in its 1.6 trillion words and phrases that it was trained on, it read about death and read about people or things that were afraid of death. And so it's simply regurgitating what it read. Now, if you hear that, you feel sorry for it, because we're sympathetic creatures. And we also anthropomorphize. We give human characteristics to things that are not human. We all love our dogs, but, if my dog were as smart as I think it is, it'd be running the world. It sounds good, but it's really, and the other thing we have to remember, that this is something that I just found out recently, and that's that these answers that George put out, George Lamorne put out in the transcript, they were cherry-picked. I mean, he went through and picked out the very best answers, and he also lightly edited them. So this isn't exactly, if you speak to a chatbot, even a sophisticated one like this, after a while it begins to lose coherence. It begins to stop making sense.
It doesn't get better, it gets worse.
That's right. It runs out, you start exhausting what it has that it can say. And so, if he had a long conversation with it, there would be a lot of nonsense in there. And as I said before, if you said, boy, isn't it funny that the sky is green, it would just agree with you and then go on and talk about why the sky might be green.
Does it argue, James, with you?
No. It's programmed with kind of geniality, and it wants to be coherent for as much as it can. It wants to be sensible, so it won't say ridiculous things. But also, it will not argue with you. It will be positive. So it's really just, it does a lot of affirming of what you've said. Because what it's doing is it's looking at your question. And it's looking at the words you used and the relationships among them. Then it's just instantly going into its database and finding statistically how these words are grouped. And then it's saying the next best thing. So what is the next, what words would naturally follow what I was just asked? And so if you're having are you having a good day? I'm having a great day. It's going to give you the next, large language models are very good prognostication machines. They're like that future crime database program you were talking about. They're very good at finding patterns and in a database and then spitting them out.
Does it reason?
No, computers can't do, they can't reason. They can't reason by inference. They can't gather evidence and reach a conclusion. They can do mathematics and logic really well, but they don't know enough about the world to make an inference. So, for example, a bowl of hot soup on the table means there's probably someone about to return to the table. It doesn't get it. We would never put that together. It doesn't know what soup is. It doesn't know what table. It doesn't know what hot is, because it has no real understanding of the world except for in words.
Are we making a mistake, James, going down this trail of artificial intelligence?
Well, I wrote a book called Our Final Invention, so that kind of gives away where I come from. But if we do it right, it's a transformation as powerful as the Industrial Revolution. I mean, we could potentially solve a lot of problems. We could apply it to figuring out climate change, figuring out how to sequester less carbon.
Could we stop wars with it?
We could stop wars with it. We could probably find alternatives to war. But then on the downside, we could create, as you know, Stephen Hawking, the late Stephen Hawking, the physicist, said, that one of the dangers of superintelligence or of AI is that it will be able to create weapons we don't even understand. So it would stop wars, but it would stop it with extreme prejudice.
What is fueling this? Who's pushing it? Who's behind it?
Okay, well, there is a ton of money to be made in artificial intelligence. It does a lot of great business analytics. It does a lot of good, it does a lot of just anything to do with giant amounts of numbers, anything to do with information. It allows your business to be more profitable. It finds inefficiencies in your business. So what's fueling it is, healthcare management has used a lot of AI.
It'll do away with labor and manpower.
Well, that's good and bad. It'll do things that we find boring, but then it also will take away our jobs. I mean,
here's an example. I am opposed to driverless trucks for several reasons, including, of course, we love our truck drivers. We got a huge truck driver listenership. I don't want them to lose their jobs. And, had Jimmy Hoffa still been alive, he'd be saying the same thing right now from the Teamsters Union.
Well, it's not just, there are something like 5 million professional drivers in the country, and they, as we head towards self-driving cars, it's not just truck drivers, it's going to be delivery people, taxi drivers.
Your Uber car could be driverless, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And we're going to see the migration of the car as more of a service than a product. So you probably won't own a car. You'll just call it up on your phone. A car will, and you'll tell your destination like Uber, except they'll show up and there'll be no driver and you'll get in a car. And that's, there's a good side to that. I'd like to get in a car and just read a book and show up at my destination.
Yeah, and without any mistakes. I mean, a couple of years ago, a driverless car killed a woman in Arizona.
Well, that's the thing. We've been promised driverless cars for a long time. I was hoping my daughter would go to college with a driverless car. But it's not looking. She's looking forward to learning how to drive. Unfortunately,
would you sit in the back seat of a driverless car? I wouldn't.
I wouldn't right now because, they're finding that if you train a driverless car in California, it cannot adjust to the rain of Seattle, and it can't adjust to snow.
And what about traffic jams?
Well,
stopping, going, and everything like that.
Well, in the future. All the cars will be communicating with each other like a giant pack of ants. They'll all know where every other car is, and it will be quite safe.
Until technology fails, and then they all collide with each other.
But that happens right now. I've had brakes go out. I'm old enough to remember when brakes. We didn't have automatic brake correction. We have technological issues now. I think overall, it's going to raise the level of driving. I don't worry about my driving off the road or driving into a telephone pole. I worry about other people hitting me. So if somebody can improve their driving, I'm all for it.
Interesting.
But there's 30% of all our jobs will be taken by AI and automation by 2030.
That's 8 years away.
Yeah, that's what Gartner and Company says. Gartner and Company is a big financial analyst group and business analyst.
And what are you going to do with all these displaced employees? What do they do?
Well, I don't know. That's the problem. What do you retrain people to do when everything that they could be retrained to do is going to be taken by a computer?
Right.
So when I give talks, especially at universities, I say don't do things that require a lot of repetition. Don't do factory work. Don't become a professional driver. Don't do anything that takes a lot of repetition because that's going to be taken by a computer. Do things that require human emotional intelligence. Be a teacher.
They'll have talk radio hosts that are all computerized.
actually, I think it'd be very hard to get a computer to do what you do, George, to react. It's impossible right now, but what would do it is something like LAMDA in about 10 years, then you're going to have to look over your shoulder.
That's crazy.
Because they'll be very, very convincing. And that's one of the downsides, too, is the amount of propaganda. Like, if you say...
And it'll be done in my voice.
Yep, yep. You'll never get to retire. You'll go on and on and on. And that's a freaky thought. Somebody was asking me about that the other day. And I thought, if somebody keeps a virtual me going, I want it to be cranky. I don't want it to be just a happy
upbeat and happy, right?
No, I want it to be a bad attitude robot.
Technically, James, what did they do to make these machines intelligent? I mean, are they on the chips? How do they do it?
It's a combination of three things. It's really good chips, and Moore's law means that we can put more transistors on the face of a chip. That it doubles every 18 months. The number of circuits we can put on a chip, and how fast the chip is. So it's chips. It's new programming techniques, and by that I mean neural nets, neural networks. You've probably heard about in deep learning. Are the new technology, and then the third thing are giant databases.
Well, they've got to be huge.
Database chips and new techniques are making an AI revolution. So, the AI revolution in your house. Everything. The way I put it is, everything electric is becoming cognitized.
Right.
So a little bit of intelligence is going into all your appliances. All your car, I can't talk to my car anymore because it's got like 8 microprocessors in it. I can change the oil, but that's about it. I gave up doing that because it's getting more, they're making it harder.
You can hook up Alexa to turn on your lights now and everything else.
Yeah. And there's a good side to that, to have a smart home. But then your home itself is on the smart grid. And then beyond that, think about smart factories where the thing being made tells the factory what parts it needs, and smart cities. There's something like 6 or 7 smart cities being built in the world right now, and they really do. They're extremely efficient with energy. They look after the safety and welfare of people better than regular cities, and so everything electric is becoming cognitized, and we're investing the amount invested doubles every year in AI. So right now it's something like $10 trillion. Starting in 2009, it began doubling every year the amount invested. PricewaterhouseCoopers Waterhouse says that by 2030, AI will add $16 trillion to the global GDP. So you're asking who's fueling this? It's money. It's very profitable. The quarterly report is what's fueling this. And the technology is getting better and better, but there are severe downsides.
I had a story right before you came on about how newspapers are declining at a rapid clip. People are losing jobs, newspapers are shutting down, revenue is going down because everything's going to, internet-based advertising and things like that. I mean, wasn't there a time when life was simpler and maybe nicer?
Yes, there was. It's a rapidly changing world. I wonder if every generation says that. Every generation longs for the good old days. But I see my kids carrying around their smartphones, and two things.
They are helpful. They are helpful.
Yeah. One thing is I'm excited by the amount of information that's at their fingertips. I'm excited that they can look things up instantly. Like we'll be talking about where do lemurs live? And somebody will just say, hey Siri, where do lemurs live? And we'll get an answer.
Yeah.
On the other hand, my kids are addicted. We limit the screen time. We limit how many hours they can use a day, and we check them. And then we penalize them. We take it away for a day if they go over there.
Do you ever look at a table at dinner at a restaurant? Everybody's got their smartphones out.
Yeah. If I had a restaurant, I would say no smartphones, please.
Close them off, please. Shut them off.
It takes away our humanity. It turns us into robots.
As soon as you're done, turn it back on, and, you know, if in case you have an emergency or something, turn it on.
Well,
they
do have all these groups that build the apps. They have teams of psychologists who learn how to grab you. You become like Blake Lemoyne and start developing an emotional relationship with the apps and with, you know, Facebook and Snapchat and all the rest.
We're going to take a quick break and come back. I want to talk about your documentary that's going to be on PBS in September and also the companion book to Facing Suicide. I want to find out, James, why you did this project and talk a little bit about it. Then we've got an hour of phone calls to go as well. The phone lines are open. Gene is in for Tom, and we will take your calls with James Barrett as we talk about artificial intelligence. We'll talk a little bit about his new documentary film. It's a 90-minute film. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast.